First, I would like to thank Professor Jeffrey and the Fields Institute for inviting me to visit the Institute. So as you know, that the moduli space of vector bundles has been studied for more than 40 years and is a major field of mathematics with contact with different areas of mathematics. Of course, algebraic geometry, number theory, mathematical physics, and topology. So what I would like to do today is to give you a survey, which is bound to be only partial, about the development of this field and also some major results. And I will also indulge myself in some reminiscences. So, and what was the situation of the field and how at least I and some of my colleagues and my collaborators got involved in this. That may have some interest also. So classically, suppose X is a compact Riemann surface of genus G. The G is of the first breaking number. Then one associates to this compact Riemann surface a complex torus called Jacobian, which is in fact an abelian variety that is projective and of dimension complex dimension G. So this comes out of the work of Abel, Jacobian, and Riemann, and others. Now, so this Jacobian J can be thought of as some divisor classes of degree 0 on X, or in more, I'll use a more modern terminology. So this is the isomorphism classes of holomorphic line bundles of degree 0, or which is same as chain class of the line bundle 0. So it parametrizes the line bundles of degree 0, and in some sense we can say J is the moduli space of line bundles of degree 0. And also classically it was known, so you can ask what is the underlying topological torus of GA. That is, I forget the complex structure, what is the torus? Then it's known this Jacobian topologically, this is the torus, all homomorphisms of the first homology group. That is the characters of H1, which is same as also the characters of the infinimatal group. So the underlying torus is just, note that this depends only on the topology. And the complex structure of the Jacobian depends on the complex structure of X. While this underlying torus depends only on the topology of X, the complex structure depends on the complex structure on X. So this is the classical theory. So in 1938, Andre Weil, the paper called Generalization of the Function of Union, envisaged a non-abelian generalization of this. I'll explain what it means in a moment. Non-abelian generalization. So, In modern terminology, we can say he inaugurated the theory of holomorphic vector bundles on X. Now, of course, at the time, the notion of vector bundle, even topology, was not around. And how did Andreev define it? I will not go into the definition, but he used, instead of the usual devices, he used matrix devices. So instead of taking monomorphic functions locally, look at matrix of monomorphic functions and properties. And again, this I will explain later at some point perhaps, this is the sort of idyllic definition of vector bundles, which has again come back into use, although vector bundles are also used, this also come back into use. In any case, he was trying to study holomorphic vector bundles in a compact Riemann surface. And so what kind of bundles did he study? Mainly he studied the following case. See here, we looked at the homomorphism of the fundamental group into X, into U1. Then the natural thing would be to look at the homomorphism of the fundamental group of X into GLN, or perhaps UN. I'll come to UN later in GLN. And to such a homomorphism, you can associate, if rho belongs to this, you can associate so-called flat holomorphic vector bundle. So flat means the following. Usually holomorphic vector bundle is given by transition functions Jij, X, which are holomorphic functions. Here, we simply assume Jij's are constants. It's a constant. That's independent of X. So bundles given by constant transition functions, and it's not hard to see that if you have homomorphism from the fundamental group in GLN, you get such a bundle. So this is what Andreev tried to study, these bundles. And then, as he himself says, in a vague and probably confused way, I'm quoting himself, Andreev himself, he was trying to construct the modular space of these vector bundles of general class 0. So trying to construct modular space of vector bundles of rank n and degree 0, say, by looking at a certain equivalence relation. Relation on home pi 1 x u 1 u vln and going to the quotient by this equivalence relation. But as it turned out, this point of view has several difficulties, which we will not go into. But what is relevant for the further development of the theory is that, as he himself says, he had a premonition, as he says, no, sorry, okay, that the bundles which arise into unitary representation, unitary group, will have an important role to play. So, flat bundles coming from the representation of pi 1 into un, not JLN. And this would be exactly the representation of what happened in the case of the Jacobian. So in this case, you had a homomorphism of, essentially these are all just homomorphisms of fundamental group into U1. So here he felt these bundles would play an important role. And also, he also knew that not all flat bundles come from unitary representation. But although this paper was, I won't say it was forgotten for about 25 years, but some people were aware of this, but somehow there was not very much further development on this paper. Now, how myself and Seshadri got involved in this. When we were graduate students, we were told about this paper by Professor Ramanathan, who was in Tata Institute, who was a student of Ziegel. And Ziegel has told him, this is an important paper, you should pay attention to this paper. And then as graduate students, we had a seminar on this paper. But, well, after some years, we went to different fields. But we didn't even realize this is going to play an important role in our later work. So, anyway, the main thing which we have retained from this paper for us, what I'm going to talk about, is that you should look at unitary representation of the fundamental group and look at flat bundles which come that way. This is important. He felt it. So, see, around 1960 or 61, I was not working in algebraic geometry. I was a student of Lorentz Schwartz, and I was working on partial differential equation and algebraic and differential geometry. But however, when I was in Paris, this paper of Cordera Spencer on deformations, local deformations of complex structures, Schwartz had a preprint, and he gave it to me to have just to read. And then, as you know, their work used very much partial differential equation and differential geometry, and therefore it was quite natural for me to study that. So, of course, they were looking at local theory of deformations, and it looked perhaps time was ripe to look into these questions of vector bundles using these modern developments. Now, what does really the situation underlie? What leads to is the following. Let me use some notation and write some mathematics. So X is a compact dimensional space. So I denote by U and zero the space of representations of fundamental group into UN modulo the equivalence relation of conjugation. That is equivalence class of representation. That is equivalence classes n dimensional unitary representation. So note that this space generalizes the underlying topological torus which we talked about in the case of line bundles. There it was just home of pi 1x into u1. And this clearly a compact space. One can easily check. It's a compact space, compact topological space. And this is a natural subset, open subset, E is MO. That means the subset of irreducible representation. So, we have the analog of the underlying topological space of the modular space which we want to construct. Because in the line bundle case, it was just this was home phi 1 into u 1. That was the underlying space for the Jacobian. Now, this space is a nice, it's a compact space. And therefore, the problem is to introduce a natural structure of a complex space, and maybe complex manifold, and perhaps with singularity. So, to introduce the structure of, say, projective variety on this space UMO. And, of course, depending on the complex structure on X, and this would be the modular space that we are trying to construct. this is what we so what Seshadri and I first did was to see that on this space you hear there's a natural structure of a complex manifold. Natural structure of a complex manifold. That was not too hard. Natural structure of a complex manifold. Now it was soon clear that if you want really a algebraic structure on this, what was missing was an algebraic characterization. Algebraic characterization. I'll explain a little more. Of flat bundles coming from unitary representation. See, note that the fundamental group is a very transcendental object, and the unitary group, UN, is also quite transcendental. But you want to, after all, remember also X is an algebraic curve over C. So you'd like to have a definition which is purely algebraic geometric of bundles which arise from unit representation. That this is the problem was very clear. So this is what we are looking for. And in a vague way, we knew also if only we had the right definition of the algebraic analog, we could even prove it. I'll explain later what I mean by that. How can you prove of something which about which you don't know anything? I'll say what I mean. So around 1960, maybe 63 or something, I don't know. So Mumford was in some sense reviving classical invariant theory of Hilbert, and then using it in a deep way to construct moduli spaces. So as part of his work, he did the following. So suppose X is an algebraic curve, that means compacting on surface, smooth, etc. And E is a holomorphic vector bundle. Or algebraic vector bundle, okay, vector bundle. On X. Then we defined a notion, which I'll do in a minute, define the notion of a stable or a semi-stable or a semi-stable electrical. So when is such a bundle semi-stable or stable? I'll give you the definition. At first, the definition will not be very suggestive, but there's a definition anyway. So we say that E is stable or S semi-stable if for every proper subbundle, holomorphic subbundle, S proper meaning not zero or whole, we have degree of S by rank. Rank is the dimension of the fiber. It's less than degree of V by rank of V. While degree of a vector bundle simply means C1E on X, the integer. So in particular, if E is degree 0, E is degree 0, degree F should be negative. So we say semi-stable if we are less than equal to. And note that it's a purely algebraic definition. It makes sense in any characteristic for that matter. And it turned out that this is exactly the definition that we are looking for. In fact, we did not need any results of Mumford. We just wanted this definition. This is what was missing. In any case, why did Mumford define this? And Mumford proved that the set of isomorphism classes of volumorphic stable volumorphic vector bundles as a natural structure of a smooth, okay, quasi projective, I'll come to that later, divided by it. And he discovered this theory, this definition, by just applying the general philosophy he had for constructing modular spaces. So some semi-stable points for a group action and so on, you can construct a quotient. And it turned out, he found that the quotient can be constructed only on bundles which are stable. So then the theorem that we proved is the following. So X is a compact Riemann surface. Well, for some, it's not important, assume G is greater than 2. Then a vector bundle of say degree 0 is stable if and only if arises from an irreducible unitary representation. Now, from which it's not difficult to get the condition to for it to come from a unitary representation, which is not necessarily irreducible. So this is the theorem. So this gives the sought for algebraic characterization of stable bundles. Now you see, once you take this point of view purely algebraic, many of these modular spaces you can also consider on any field, more or less. I mean, any characteristic, let's say even algebraic closed button arbitrary characteristic. Now, probably it's a good thing to say a few words about the proof that we had, which is in some sense based on a very general method, but in each case, of course, you have to prove things. Now, this is so-called continuity method. And which was sort of discovered by Poincaré and Klein in trying to prove the uniformization theorem. And although I think they didn't quite succeed in proving the uniformization theorem by this method, later other methods were used. So what is this method? I mean, I'll say somewhat in general terms and then specialize to this case. I mean, suppose you have two kind of objects, A and B, and you want to prove these are the same. In our case, the unitary irreducible bundles coming from irreducible unitary representations, on the other hand, stable bundles. So the idea is, you show that the set of isomorphism classes of these objects form a manifold, maybe differentiable or topological. Similarly, these form a manifold of the same dimension. And then you know that every object of A is an object of B. Let's assume we know that. That in other words, there's a map from A to B, say a continuous map. Which is injective, it's not important. These are usually easy to check. let's also assume that we know that the manifold B is connected. And suppose you can prove that the image of A is open and closed, and let's assume A is non-empty, then the image must be the whole. If I can prove the image is open and closed, I am assuming P, B is connected, then the image must be the whole. That means every object in this B is also an object of A. So this is the idea. So usually in these cases what happens is, not too hard to prove that A and B are manifolds, nor is it difficult to prove the image is open. But often the difficulty is to prove the image is closed. So in our case what's going to happen? This A is going to be, what I call U0N irreducible. Irreducible unitary representations, and mapping will be M0N stable bundles of DV0. In other words, you first prove your bundle which comes from irreducible unitary representation is stable. It's not so difficult. Now, you prove the image is open by some kind of differential computation. But image is closed comes from the fact that this is irreducible as a natural compactification of all unitary representations. This compact. See, usually to prove that something is closed, you show that the mapping is proper. So, of course, if here this were compact, it is obvious, but our manifold is not quite compact. But it is a natural compactification, and you can use it somehow to argue as though this were compact. So this is the proof. And here, for example, I said you can use a differential computation. You can also use, for example, Brouwer's open mapping theorem. And in fact, this interesting story, which probably many of you know, that when Poincaré and Klein were trying to prove the uniform exchange theorem by this method, there were some, Poincaré said to Klein, no, you didn't prove that it is closed properly and so on. And apparently Brouwer at the time has proved the Brouwer open mapping theorem and wrote to Poincaré saying that, well, you didn't even prove it was open. But I have my theorem, I can prove from this. And Poincaré said, yeah, that's very nice, but I can compute a differential and see it's open. So, anyway. And so this is the method. So when I said, I made some curious remark that if only we had the right definition, we could almost prove it. The idea was we had in mind this continuity method. If only we knew what's the second side, we could probably try to use the continuity method and prove it. So this we were aware. We were aware of the method of proof in some sense. But what was lacking was the definition, and that was provided by Mumford. And I should also say, I assume here is a degree zero in this theorem, but it is not necessary. For any degree also you can do it. But the pi 1 has to be replaced by a suitable Fuchsian group. And an interesting consequence of this is, if I take M and D, the space of stable bundles of rank N and degree D, this is compact, in fact, it's projective, if N and D are co-prime. So that's also a consequence of what we showed. When degree zero in general, it has singularities, this manifold. When N and D are co-prime, it is even smooth and compact and projective. So we have this nice new varieties MNG, when MNG are coprime. See, some later proofs of this use partial differential equations, but in some sense there's also some continuity method going on there. Okay, so we have now M and D, I recall, this is modular space of stable bundles. D and rank n. I'll assume n and d are coprime. So that this is a nice compact complex manifold. Or in fact a projective variety by Mumford. And then so we have all these new varieties and Ramanan and I undertook a rather intensive study of these varieties for several years. And I'll just mention two of these themes which we did. One is we were very surprised to find very close connection with classical algebraic geometry and some of these subjects which have been forgotten and which were very popular at one time, like quadratic complexes. Of course, Kummer surfaces are not completely forgotten. For example, quadratic complexes of lines. And Kummer surfaces is essentially in our case Jacobian modulo the involution x2 minus x of J to the inverse. So these all reappeared as in connection with modular spaces. So just to give and even more surprisingly, one could solve some classical questions in classical algebraic geometry which had a priori no mention of vector bundles by using theory of vector bundles. So I'll give one or two instances. So one is, so suppose I take G equal to 2 and rank is 2 and degree is 0, but I will also assume not only degree is 0 that the detrimental bundle is trivial. Then in this case the modular space turned out to be P3, second, but more in but if you take G equal to 2, M equal to 2, and D equal to 1, and lambda 2 is fixed, it turned out this is a intersection of two quadrics, P5. Which is essentially this what I was talking about, quadratic complexes of lines. And then the naturally Kummer surface is contained here. Now see, nowadays everybody defines Kummer surface as Jacobian modulo plus or minus 1. That's not how Kummer discovered the surface. In fact, by looking through the theory of quadratic complexes of line, he discovered it. And it's apparently Cayley who noticed that it is the abelian variety modulo plus or minus I, and this all come very naturally when you study this modular space. Okay. And in the case of genus 3, it's even more interesting. So here the Kummer variety, that is, it's a three-dimensional variety, is contained in P7, and then there's a quartic hypersurface described by Kobol, which is contained in P7, of course, such that K is contained in the singularity. this assessed. So nowadays it's called a Kobol quartic, and it turned out this is exactly the modular space of, in the case of genus 3, vector bundles of rank 2 and trivial determinant. Now, these results, solved a problem which was raised, so it's a bar about at least 60 years before we proved it, which said that the Kumar surface is actually defined by certain quartic equations, namely now by the differential coefficient, the partial derivatives of the quartic. And this again comes from identification of the modular space. So this is one theme. The other theme, which is we discovered that the key to the deeper study of these modular spaces is a certain correspondence between these modular spaces. Suppose you take MN1 or MN0 and MN1 or something like this, degree 0 and degree 1, there's a certain correspondence here. And this, which we later present Heke correspondences, and although we first came across it from this situation of purely classical algebraic geometry, and it is also turned out is related to so-called elementary transformations in which was known to classical algebraic geometers. Now it is this existence of this correspondence and some study of this it's a kind of bootstrap for which the strap is this kind of correspondence, because there's nothing else to go by to study. But if you use the correspondence and how it behaves, what are the fibers and so on, and then it gives. So if you want to prove something about this variety, it's very. So you use, go to the correspondence, do something here. You don't know much, but do something here and come back, and you seem to get some very interesting results. So, and now of course this Heke correspondence play a very important role, as you certainly know, in this so-called geometric Langlands correspondence and so on. And in fact, it's Adler and Anderweil who point out to us that what we are doing is seems to be the analog of Heke correspondence, Heke operators, and that's what they would call it, Heke correspondence. Okay. So that is one part of the study. The other question is naturally to compute the Betti numbers. These spaces M and D, again assuming say M and D are coprime. Now, in the case of N equal to 2 and D equal to 1, see, after all, this space is a certain space of representations of maybe some Fuchsian group. You can try to study directly the space of representation in the topology. This is what Newstead did and computed all the Betti numbers. Well, fixed determinant, but don't worry about that, he said. But when n is greater than 2, this direct attack does not give you much. I mean, one doesn't succeed. So, Harder and I, it's around the time while conjectures was put by Delin. So my problem is to compute the Betti numbers of some algebraic varieties. Now, as I said, we can do it over any field and so on. So you start with a, let's say, a finite field, a curve defined over the finite field, you construct the moduli space and try to compute the number of rational points of this moduli space over the finite field and also over every extension of the finite field. So the problem is to compute. So the idea was, so suppose for x over a finite field, SQ, finite field, and you look at this mx, n0 or whatever nd, and compute the number of rational points. Number of rational points over this field, over the finite field. And you do it also over the finite extension of this finite field. Then the wild conjectures would tell you how to compute the Betti numbers. So that is the first idea, but of course you have to compute the rational points. And then the interesting thing is, you go back to the definition of van der Waals, of more or less of vector bundles in the moduli space, as some, double cosets of the ideal. So you take the ideal space of the function field of x, and then you take some GL and A, take a suitable double coset. And this is exactly van der Waals matrix divisor. If you just translate it, that's what he did. Now I work with SLN. So, and then you use some Tamagawa number is 1 or whatever. So essentially the problem is to compute the rational points using the idealic description. But it's in this context we order and I also found a natural filtration on the on any vector bundles, not necessarily semi-stable. So with, okay, suppose E is any vector bundle, not necessarily semi-stable, not necessarily semi-stable. Then there exists a unique filtration of E by sub-bundles. Semi-stable and degree of E naught or length of E naught statement degree of E1 over rank of, sorry, E1 over E naught over and so on. So the point is this filtration is canonical once it satisfies these conditions. And sometimes it says that you can build up every vector bundle from semi-stable bundles in a more or less canonical fashion. See, the point is, my whole double coset space will give me information about all vector bundles. And I want information only about semi-stable vector bundles because that's my moduli space, rational points. So this gives a natural stratification and so on in the stack. So actually it is not very hard to prove. But it seems to be very useful and is used in many contexts, including arithmetic and even commutative algebra recently. So this is the better one proved. So this says what it is related to number theory. And some years later, Atiyah Bhatt also calculated the Betti numbers. And so you can say using ideas from gauge theory, also calculate the Betti numbers. while this big ideal space and so on is replaced by some big infinite dimensional space and so on. One of the key inputs in the proof is also this filtration. So it is this filtration with the certification given by this has to be used. Originally they were trying to use some kind of filtration by some coming from more theories, but I suggested why don't you use this filtration, and that's how it happened. Okay, so this gives some idea about its relation to classical analytic geometry, which really interested us very much. And so some ideas from it may be called number theory and gauge theory and so on. Now what I should do is I was first thinking of giving some examples again coming from conformal field theory and Bernoulli formula, again relation to physics. And the only thing I want to mention is the physics seems to be using this, and also as important, the many insights and problems from physics has also contributed to the development of this theory. Now probably it's some time to talk about two other things. About what about generalization to higher dimensions? We are looking at curves so far. So suppose now X is a smooth projective variety over C, let's say, for the moment. It could be any algebraic closed field for the moment. See, if you want a compact modular space, you cannot only restrict yourself to vector bundles. You have also to use sheaves. To compactify, you need some torsion-free sheaves. That's only what makes it compact. But I will not go into this, but now I will just try to say what's the analog of the theorem of Seshadri and me, which we proved in this case, which is only a statement on vector bundles. So, first, of course, you take E as a vector bundle, holomorphic vector bundle. Now, the first thing is there is no intrinsic notion of semi-stability or stability. You must choose an ample line bundle. So, it depends on you choose an ample line bundle. Ample line bundle. Say, which you do not by O1 or L or whatever. So, the notion of semi-stability depends on this. Because the only problem is to define the degree of this bundle. Then the definition is same. So you define degree of E to be C1 FE into C1 L to a suitable power so that you can integrate. So it depends on this line bundle. So if it is, for example, surface, algebraic surface, it will be C1 E into C1 L. L is the chain class of the ample bundle. So once you have the notion of degree, the semi-stability and stability definitions are same. So the problem is to get an analog of the theorem. What are semi-stable or stable bundles? And actually the result was conjectured by Ichin and Kobayashi. So they defined the notion of Hermitian Einstein metric, which I can say in a minute, maybe, on a bundle. And the conjecture was, if the bundle is stable, it admits Hermitian Einstein metric. I'll say what the Hermitian metric is. The converse is almost true. Okay, I mean, I don't want to say, this is a deeper point. Now I should say what the Hermitian Einstein metric is. So, So you take E of all modes of vector bundles on X, H admission metric on E. So assume the X is the Kähler manifold are given by that form, Kähler manifold. Okay, first, once you have holomorphic vector bundles and the admission metric on a complex manifold, it gives us a natural connection on E, so called Chern connection. And therefore, I can look at this curvature form. So, curvature form, which is a two form with coefficients and end of E. Okay? Here only I use a Holmorphic bundle. Now I use the Kähler metric. Now the Kähler form gives rise to a certain operator lambda which decreases degrees. So the curvature form say omega. And look at lambda omega. This will be lambda into identity of E. Okay, let me explain this. See, omega is a two form with coefficients in endomorphism. But when I apply lambda, the two form part will become zero form. So only what is left will be endomorphism. So that endomorphism must be lambda, the scalar times identity. Okay, this is the definition of Hermitian-Einstein metric. So if there is Hermitian-Einstein metric, if it is stable, then there is a Hermitian-Einstein metric. And this was proved by Donaldson and Rosenbach-Yau. Now this kind of identification reduces some questions in differential four manifolds. To study the modular space of vector bundles or compactifications on an algebraic surface. Algebraic surface meaning dimension 2. So, take X as an algebraic surface now. X algebraic surface. That is dim CX is 2. Then you look at, usually people look at only rank 2, some modular space of vector bundles and X, probably suitably compactified. You have to do that, compactified by using, there are many kinds of compactification. Okay. So you look at this modular space M. Then the Donaldson invariants are simply intersection numbers. Yes. 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 Sure. Which decreases the degree by 2. So you have M is the modular space. Then there are certain natural cohomology class here, whose analog in the case of curves was done by Newsted. So it's just a generalization. Look at the Chern class of the Poincaré bundle and then Kunneth component, whatever. Some natural cohomology classes. And therefore you can look at their intersection numbers. That is, you take a product of some of them, so that is top degree, and then evaluate the fundamental class intersection numbers. And essentially, these are the Donaldson invariants of Donaldson polynomials. So, this kind of experience in curves, including the Newsted's results and so on, is the one which immediately suggests, what one should do. Of course, it's difficult to compute, but so that is the So this shows that there is also interest in studying the modular spaces in higher dimensions, that is, less surfaces. But there I think there is not, people have studied just enough to get the results they want to prove. But this kind of intensive study one had made of modular spaces of curves, I don't think has been done even in the case of surfaces. And also I just want to mention two other topics, I have no time here. One is, instead of taking GLN, you can take any semi-simple Lie group or a reductive Lie group. Now, in the case of curves, and for dimension, that is dimension 1, and in for complex numbers, this has been done long ago by Ramanathan. He constructed the modular space, which is not a straightforward generalization at all of Mumford's work. It is quite difficult work. But in higher dimension, there are many papers, many announcements and many papers. I don't think any paper has been, published. And the second question is in characteristic P, some of these questions, the principal bundles, it becomes somewhat more complicated. See, one of the reasons why principal bundles don't make too much difference in the case of characteristic zero is, suppose G is a semi-simple group, and H is another semi-simple or reductive group. Suppose you have homomorphism rho. And whatever the notion of semi-stability you have for G, suppose E is G semi-stable, then the rho star E, the bundle by extension of such group, is also semi-stable in characteristic 0. And it's false in characteristic P. For example, if you look at a Frobenius homomorphism, something is false. So this makes it difficult to construct the moduli, and I would like to end my talk saying it's an embarrassing situation that as far as we know, the modular space of principal bundles in characteristic P is not constructed even in the case of curves. But even the evaluative criteria and so on is not done. Boundedness, I proved it some time back. So this is, I think I've given some idea of what this field is about and what are its interconnections with other fields, and I hope to give some idea of others.